carers. This chapter examines the role of carers and their contribution to the disability services sector. Carers play a crucial role in the lives of people with disability. The informal networks of support provided by family and friends relieve a great deal of pressure from the formal support system. During the inquiry, it became evident that there are a number of distinct issues facing carers, including the provision of respite and supported accommodation services, person-centered service delivery and futures planning services. This chapter also examines the stress placed on family relationships when caring for a person with disability, and explores the specific needs of older carers, culturally and linguistically diverse, called and Aboriginal carers. The issues raised by carers are significant, and illustrate the broader concerns in the disability services sector which are examined in all chapters. As such, this chapter does not make any recommendations, rather the recommendations concerning these issues can be found throughout the report. The role of paid carers is specifically examined in Chapter 11. Role of carers 10.1. There are approximately 750,000 carers in New South Wales. 1. Carers New South Wales, the peak organisation for carers in the state, defined a carer as any individual who provides unpaid care and support to a family member or friend who has a disability, mental illness, drug and alcohol dependencies, chronic condition, terminal illness or who is frail. 2. Carers New South Wales continued that carers come from all walks of life, cultural backgrounds and age groups. For many, caring is a 24-hour job that is often emotionally, physically, and financially stressful. 3. 10.2. The committee received a lot of evidence from carers, who revealed their feelings of love, dedication and at times, desperation, as they face their caring duties. The author of Submission 71 shared her story of caring for her daughter. My daughter requires 24/7 specialized care, and we have to guard her health from environmental element, wind, rain, debris-like sand, hair etc. from being inhaled through her trachea and into her lungs, as well as safeguarding her from catching cold and flu as best as we can. Even bathing/showering her is risky as she could accidentally splash/inhale water down her trachea. Basically, I adore my child, and as hard as it is to have given up my life and career, and other relationships and interests, and as complex as her health is, I'm happily devoted to her life and well-being, for both my children. 4. 10.3. The author of Submission 88 described her experience of caring for her husband who is a complete C4/C5 quadriplegic. I am constantly struggling with all that is required of looking after him, our 7-year-old daughter, running a household, looking after the house, working part-time, and in a constant state of panic if we don't have enough money to survive. 5. 10.4. Ms. Jennifer Alloam, carer to David, reflected on her determination to assist her son to receive essential services, and the impact on her family of her being her son's carer. I have also been forced to become a lobbyist and a fundraiser for disability and disability health services, writing endless submissions to government inquiries, attending meetings with service providers and other parent groups, and attending roundtables to advise governments about policy, leaving less time for my family, and making my role as carer to my son more strained. I have no doubt that this has contributed significantly to my marriage of nearly 3 decades ending, like so many other marriages when there is a child with a disability. 6. 10.5. Carers play a critical role in the lives of people with disability. Informal networks of support have significant financial and social impacts on people with disability and the wider community. Mr. Dougie Hurd, Executive Officer of the Disability Council of New South Wales, reflected on the significance of carers to the disability sector, stressing that the system would fail without them. The system could not work without the informal network of support. It is that straightforward. The lives of many people with disability, not all, are made tolerable and possible because of the support they get from family members, friends, neighbors and others. It is usually women, usually mothers or wives or sisters, who put in hours that would probably be illegal if they were being paid for them, and under terms that probably would not meet the occupational health and safety requirements that non-government staff are required to meet when they go into somebody's house. 7. Recognition of carers 10.6. The government applauded the work of carers and acknowledged the significant contribution they played in the lives of their loved ones. Mr. Jim Moore, Director General of Aging, Disability and Home Care, supported Mr. Hurd's assessment of the role of carers, and particularly the unquantifiable non-financial benefits of carers. The thing that is much more important in understanding the role of carers is not just that they are saving us money, but the difference in the life of the person with the disability that they make. The person with the disability is now going to live a long life, is going to need to have people who are not unduly burdened by people who are able to help them build their life in the community. The more we have people continuing in those roles in whatever level they can manage, the better the social outcomes we will get. That is the one that the financial analysis misses time and again. It is not just about numbers in this case. 8.10.7. The government's 2007 Carers Action Plan 2007 to 2012 praised carers and their role in the community. In the foreword, the former Premier, Maurice Emer MP, also gave high praise to carers and the role they played in the community, stating that more than 1 in 10 members of the New South Wales community are carers, dedicated citizens making an unsung yet indispensable contribution to our social fabric. 9.10.8. In recent years, the New South Wales government has taken significant steps to support and recognise the important role carers play in the community, although evidence received through the inquiry suggested that there is still a long way to go. In its submission, ADHC affirmed its commitment to ensuring carers are respected and valued through improving services and supports as set out in Stronger Together, and the New South Wales Carers Action Plan 2007 to 2012. ADHC is supporting and recognising the 750,000 carers in New South Wales, so that they are respected and valued, as well as improving services for carers and the people they care for. This commitment aligns with the New South Wales Carers Action Plan. Under Stronger Together, the number and types of respite services available have been increased, providing greater flexibility and responsiveness to carer needs. 10.10.9. The New South Wales Carers Action Plan 2007-2012 sets out 5 priorities for action that are fundamental to improving the quality of life for carers and the individuals that they care for. 11. Carers New South Wales praised the plan, saying it signalled that the government recognised carers' issues crossed a range of government agencies. 12.10.10. Another initiative to assist carers is the Companion Card New South Wales. Individuals with a significant or permanent disability who require attendant care for the rest of their lives are eligible to receive the card, which enables free admission to certain community activities and events to attendant carers supporting people with disability. 13.10.1. Additionally, ADHC has established the Local Carer Awards Program in 2010. These awards recognize the outstanding contributions made by local carers and carer groups. 14.10.12. The Shadow Minister for Aging and Disability Services introduced a private member's bill titled the Carers Recognition Bill 2010 to Parliament on the 12th of March 2010. 15.10.13. In April 2010, members of the New South Wales Parliament passed the Carers Recognition Act New South Wales 2010. This bill seeks to acknowledge, protect, and promote the rights of carers. The objects of the bill are to enact a carers charter, to recognize the role and contribution of carers to our community and to the people they care for, and to increase the awareness of the valuable contribution that carers make to our community. 16.10.14. Schedule 1 of the Carers Recognition ACT 2010, New South Wales provides the New South Wales Carers Charter. The valuable social and economic contribution that carers make to the community and the persons for whom they care should be recognised and supported. B. Carers' health and well-being are to be given due consideration. C. The views and needs of carers and the views, needs and best interests of the persons for whom they care must be taken into account in the assessment, planning, delivery and review of services provided to persons who are cared for. D. Carers should be referred to and made aware of appropriate services to assist carers in their caring role. Such referrals should be made after an assessment of the needs of carers, or as part of the assessment or provision of services to the person being cared for. E. The relationship between carers and the persons for whom they care should be respected. F. Carers are to be acknowledged and recognized as having their own individual needs within and beyond their caring role. This acknowledgement and recognition is to take into consideration Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander culture, age, disability, religion, socio-economic status, cultural differences, gender identification and place of residence. G. Children and young people who are carers have the same rights as all children and young people. H. Children and young people who are carers face additional difficulties and burdens, and should be supported in overcoming these difficulties and burdens. I. Carers should have the same rights, choices and opportunities as other Australians. J. Carers' choices in their caring role should be supported and recognised, including the recognition of carers in the assessment, planning, delivery and review of services that impact on carers and their role as carers. K. The additional difficulties faced by remote and rurally based carers caused by isolation should be recognised and acknowledged. L. Support for carers should be timely, responsive, appropriate, and accessible. M. Carers' unique knowledge and experience should be acknowledged and recognized. 17.10.15. During the agreed to in principle speech, the Honourable Carmel Tebbutt MP, Minister for Health, was effusive in her praise for carers. There are 750,000 carers in New South Wales. That is more than one in every 10 of us. Carers are mothers and daughters, fathers and sons, nieces, nephews, aunties and uncles, grandparents. They are people who know someone who is disabled, old and frail, or suffering from an illness, and they take the very human decision to provide them with personal care, support, and assistance. These are people who care about someone else. Because they are often not paid for what they do, their contribution to our society does not register in economic statistics or analyses of national well-being. But without them, our society simply would not work the way it does. They are the often unsung and unseen heroes of our community. They make an enormous contribution and they deserve our respect, support, and recognition. 18.10.16. New South Wales Health informed the committee that in July 2010 the Premier allocated responsibility for the Act to ADHC and transferred policy responsibility for carers from New South Wales Health to ADHC. 19. This will include the New South Wales Carers Action Plan 2007-2012, the Evaluation Plan for the Carers Action Plan, the Statewide NGO Carer Grants Program, and peak funding for carers New South Wales. 20.10.17. In April 2009 the Federal Government released Who Cares? Report on the inquiry into better support for carers, herein known as Who Cares? Closed bracket. The report investigated how the government could improve its support to unpaid carers. The committee made 50 recommendations. The primary recommendation sought to secure immediate financial relief for carers by increasing the base rate of income support for carers, and has called for means testing thresholds to be reviewed. 21. In its government response to the report, the Commonwealth Government agreed to this recommendation and increased the carer payment. The Commonwealth Government has implemented this recommendation through the 2009-10 Budget Secure and Sustainable Pension Reform Package. This package provided an increase in pension rates from the 20th of September 2009. The increase in the rate of pensions, which includes carer payment, was $32.50 per week for full-rate singles and $10.15 per week for couples combined. In addition to the rise in the rate of carer payment, the Commonwealth Government introduced a new permanent carer supplement of $600 per year for carer payment recipients, and an additional $600 per year for carer allowance recipients for each eligible person in their care. 22.10.18. The Commonwealth Government has also instigated a number of policy changes that impact on carers, such as the National Disability Agreement. The National Disability Agreement is discussed in Chapter 2. Supported Accommodation. 10.19. The availability of supported accommodation was a pressing concern raised by carers during the inquiry. Carers New South Wales contend that despite the government's work to increase the number of supported accommodation places, there continues to be significant unmet need for accommodation choices for people with disability. 23. Supported accommodation placements offer people with disability an opportunity to live away from their family in a supported environment that adequately meets their care needs. 10.20. In its joint submission, the Physical Disability Council of New South Wales, PCDN, and Council on the Aging New South Wales, COTA, noted that the apparent shortage of placement options was identified by working carers in its report No Place for Our Loved Ones to Go. The report stated that last year, 2008, there were 1,700 requests from carers already in crisis seeking supported accommodation for their loved one with a disability. Only 112 places were available. 24. 10.21, inquiry participants echoed the need for more supported accommodation. Carers, such as Ms. Bernadette Marshall, expressed feelings of despondency as they sought to secure suitable accommodation for their loved ones. 25. Lynn, an older carer, described families being ignored or tossed from pillar to post before being able to receive a supported accommodation placement. 26. Issues concerning supported accommodation and committee recommendations can be found in Chapter 5 and Chapter 6. 10.22. Difficulties securing supported accommodation placements were vividly illustrated by Ms. Christine Regan, Senior Policy Officer, NCOS, who shared the story of a carer who was hospitalized before her son could be offered a placement. I know of one woman who could not get equipment into her house in order to have her son, who had very high support needs, seated and into bed. This was only about 3 years ago. She used to put a sleeping bag on the floor, and she fed him on the floor, until her own shoulders gave out, and she had to go into hospital. Only at that point was she offered supported accommodation for her son, when she had completely broken down. 27. 10.23. A number of carers referred to the system as being in crisis, and called for the government to act swiftly. The author of Submission No. 110, carer to her son, said that the most critical and pressing problem amongst the services funded by ADHC is the extreme shortage of supported accommodation and the absence of any planning around it. Emphasis as per original. 28. The author of Submission No. 82 had similar concerns, stating access to supported accommodation continues to be by crisis. Only supported accommodation needs to be seen as a top priority by governments and a right for people who have a disability. 29. 10.24. A number of carers called for improved future planning of services to assist families make arrangements for a time when they can no longer care for their loved one. 30. The ability to plan and secure supported accommodation would ease some of the burden of caring, particularly for older carers, and is examined in Chapter 10. 10.25. The case study below highlights the overwhelming desire of a carer to find a supported accommodation placement for her son, brought before the committee during its public forum. Case study X, Ms. Janice Marshall. 31. My name is Janice Marshall and I am the mother of Daniel, my 22-year-old son, who has autism, suffers from extreme anxiety, has bizarre behaviors, is very destructive, and has an intellectual disability. He lives at home with us. I would like to address one of the most critical problems facing ADHC, the acute shortage of supported accommodation for our adult children with disabilities. To solve this problem, I propose the following three solutions. 1. Families should have the right to future planning for an organized and timely transition for their loved one into an appropriate accommodation setting, with quality services and a degree of family control. This will relieve families of a burden of stress, improve their mental and physical health, encourage them to be greater partners in the process, and reduce total costs. 2. Individualized funding packages would allow families to be involved in deciding on how their loved one will be best accommodated. They are the people who best know and understand the person with a disability, and should help choose appropriate service providers. 3. Many families may be prepared to provide equity in some form to their loved one's accommodation solution, either in the form of a physical home, funding contribution, or informal supports to help in the day-to-day care by means of friends, family, or community members. If ADHC would be more flexible and allow families more control over the type and quality of care, this would all reduce cost to ADHC and spread funding over more families. I come from a privileged background of having had a university education and a successful business career in the investment industry, but nothing prepares you for the stress and trauma of living with autism every day for 22 years. It has taken a mighty toll on our family. My husband was diagnosed with Parkinson's disease 4 years ago at the age of 51, an illness which, if not caused by stress, certainly is made much worse by ongoing stress. Our 20-year-old daughter suffers from an anxiety disorder, which has certainly been made worse by our son, and which has almost claimed her life. After years and years of therapy with us, our son, Daniel, also would like to live away from us. He has had enough of us. There are families worse than us, and one family in our group has relinquished care only this week, with all the emotional trauma and guilt which comes with it. 10.26. Some carers have undertaken innovative approaches to encourage ADHC to create more supported accommodation facilities. The committee heard of a group of parent carers who have created a lobby group to secure supported accommodation in the ride area. The ride area supported accommodation for intellectually disabled hopes to gain funding to build 5 cluster homes to support the needs of their loved ones. 32.10.27 ADHC acknowledged that there is unmet need for supported accommodation placements. However, there was some debate as to the actual number of people with disability requiring assistance. The Australian Institute of Health and Welfare has reported that the number of people with unmet need for supported accommodation in New South Wales is approximately 10,000. 33. Mr. Moore challenged this statistic. If we look at our registers of requests for supported accommodation, where people can ask, we will list them, and that is the list we draw on to fill vacancies. We have about 750 people at the moment who are saying, were they to be asked, they could accept a place immediately. We have another 1,000 who would say they would like a place sometime in the future. It is still a long way to go from there to get to 10,000. 34. 10.28. ADHC has taken steps to improve supported accommodation options since the introduction of Stronger Together. There have been hundreds of additional supported accommodation places allocated since 2006. 35. 10.29. The issues raised by carers regarding unmet need for supported accommodation are consistent with the wider debate raised by other inquiry participants. For more information about unmet for supported accommodation, see Chapter 5 and Chapter 6. 10.30. Carers were concerned about the practices of certain supported accommodation facilities that their family members currently reside in. The committee heard of poorly trained staff and unsuitable placements. For example, Carolyn Mason, mother, and carer to Amy, told of poor management and unprofessional behavior of staff at her daughter's group home. 36. 10.31. The families of a 51-year-old woman with Down syndrome and an older man with Down syndrome were devastated that a young, nonverbal autistic male with obsessive compulsive tendencies had been placed in their loved one's supported accommodation facility. Ms. Valerie Noon, sister to the 51-year-old woman, said she feared for her sister's safety since the new house member had been introduced. 37. The author of Submission 43, brother to the older man, said the inappropriate placement impacted negatively on the quality of life of all of the members and staff of the home. 38. 10.32. Another example of poor placement choice was described by the author of Submission 109. Carer to her daughter with complex medical issues. The carer was distressed that a man was placed in her daughter's group home. Her daughter had previously been sexually assaulted by another man and became anxious and fearful about another male joining the home. 39. Respite. 10.33. During the inquiry, carers shared their experiences of accessing respite services. While certain stacker holders were happy with the services they received, others discussed problems such as unsuitable services and unmet need. 10.34. ADHC defines respite as planned short-term and time-limited breaks for families and other unpaid caregivers of children with a developmental delay and adults with an intellectual disability, in order to support and maintain the primary caregiving relationship. 40. There are 4 types of ADHC-provided or funded respite activity: center-based, general and specialist, home-based, host family, community-based. 10.35. The committee received a number of positive stories about carers' experience with out-of-home respite. Most families told the committee that without respite they would be unable to cope with caring for their family member. In her submission, Ms. Estelle Shields explained that she was grateful for the ADHC provided respite services she received for her son. However, at times she has encountered difficulties. ADHC runs an excellent respite facility in my local area, with experienced, caring and long-term staff who have come to know their clients and families well. I can tell you that almost everything that has made my life worth living in the past 10 to 15 years has happened because my son has been in respite. There have been other times when blocked beds have precluded his attendance at respite and all plans have had to be put on hold. Not only does respite give me a break, but it gives my son a social experience and prepares him for the inevitable move out of home. 41. 10.36. Ms. Rallo told the committee she had positive experiences accessing respite for her son at the Estra Foundation in Gladesville, an ADHC-funded facility. They have embraced our family and saved my sanity. David has been able to learn to let others care for him, which is very important should he ever achieve supported accommodation, and will certainly be needed if/when I should suddenly die and he is left without my care. More importantly, he is given the opportunity of being with his peers. He loves staying at the respite house. From my point of view, I have a chance to break away from the 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. routine that dominates my existence for a few days every month to 6 weeks. 42.10.37. Not all families are able to access out-of-home respite. Ms. Debbie Robertson, carer to Brett, told the committee that, because of her son's severe intellectual disability and behavior he currently receives in home respite, and that this impacts on her caring duties. We have had several attempts over the years to access ADHC respite. However, there was never a suitable place for him where he would be kept safe. Though service met Brett's needs in terms of him absconding, this has meant that we have been unable to have much needed breaks away from the caring role, and this has taken an enormous toll on our health as individuals and as a family. At present, we receive 5 hours a month in home respite, and that is as far as the respite goes. 43.10.38. Ms. Robertson continued that she hoped there may be an opportunity for Brett to access out-of-home respite in the future. At the moment, we are in the process. It seems after 20-odd years, Brett is now 29 years old, that we might hopefully have found a respite unit, which is in Blacktown, that is suitable for Brett. But we are in the process now of just going through getting him eased into being away from home. He is now 29, and because of unsuitable respite, he is not accustomed to being away from home. 44.10.39. Some carers also shared negative experiences accessing out-of-home respite for their loved ones. Ms. Maloney told of her unfortunate experience using an ADHC provided respite service for her son. We were referred to an ADHC center-based respite house and received about 2 nights respite per 6 week period. I think we used it 2 or 3 times. I never saw the same person twice. Charlie was a toddler with an intellectual age of less than 9 months. I hated dropping him off with complete strangers every single time. It goes against all maternal instincts, but I was desperate. Finally, my older son, who must have been 6 or 7 years old at the time, said to me one day as we were driving away, "Don't leave Char there, Mum, go back and get him." I don't think I did go back, but we have never used an ADHC managed service since then. 45.10.40. Alternatively, Ms. Maloney had positive experiences using church-based respite. 46.10.41. The committee heard that there were concerns about the behavior of clients and staff in certain respite facilities. Mr. Reg Mason, carer and father to Amy, informed the committee of an incident involving alleged improper conduct by a respite client towards his daughter. Mr. Mason expressed anxiety about an older man with an intellectual disability having an inappropriate romantic relationship with his daughter while she was visited an ADHC-funded respite center. Mr. Mason believed that the respite center staff's decision to not act on the matter was irresponsible and cavalier. 47.10.42. During the inquiry, as with unmet need for other services, the issue of unmet need for respite was discussed by carers. Carers New South Wales reported that in its consultation with carers, almost all carers said that they wanted more respite. 48. The Association for Children with a Disability New South Wales, ACD New South Wales, had a similar complaint and noted that many families claim that there is just not enough respite available, and of the respite models that are available, they are not flexible enough to allow the family to tailor the service to the child's individual needs. 49.10.43. In an answer to question on notice, Mr. Moore told the committee that the government is working towards addressing issues of respite provision. Since the introduction of Stronger Together, an additional 5,036 respite places made available. 50.10.44. The provision and delivery of respite services can cause tension between the rights of carers and the rights of people with disability. There was some debate as to whether the way in which respite is provided causes a conflict of interest between carers and care recipients. Mr. Hurd explained this argument and its grounding in the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. "I think respite should be an outcome, not a place you go to. We have created day center-based respite facilities only because we have created a tension between people with disability and those that care for them. You do not need center-based respite if you have provided a network of support around people. Here is where the tension comes, in that I think we will have to look at in future. If it is true that the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities says that people with disability have rights as citizens, then removing them from their home To give someone else a break is a breach of the convention. We will have to look at that tension in reality in the future, but I know what the reality is. 51, 10.45. Ms. Ruth Robinson, Executive Officer, Physical Disability Council of New South Wales, also noted the potential conflict of interest in the provision of respite. Respite is a complicated thing, but a rather fabulous thing. It provides an opportunity potentially for the person who is the recipient of care to have an interesting and worthwhile experience, and it provides an opportunity for those people who are their care providers to do other things in their life and recharge their batteries. Unfortunately, when you are looking at the provision of respite, it becomes a question of whose needs are you going to meet? Are you going to meet the needs of the carer and just pop the person somewhere or anywhere to get that break, or are you going to be focusing on the person with the disability? 52. Committee comment 10.46. The committee acknowledges the love and dedication shown by the carers who appeared before it. The committee admires their devotion to their children and partners and respects their commitment to caring for their loved ones. The committee recognizes that the work carers do is essential to the functioning of the disability services sector. 10.47. The committee recognized carers' frustration at the apparent lack of suitable supported accommodation and respite options. ADHC has noted that this is an important issue and is working towards its goals as outlined in Stronger Together. It is expected that the government will continue to improve these services after the introduction of Stronger Together Second. The committee's recommendations addressing issues in the delivery of supported accommodation and respite can be found in Chapter 5 and Chapter 6. 10.48. The committee notes that there can be a conflict of interest in the provision of respite between carers and care recipients. Respite should serve the interests of both groups equally. The committee understands that it is difficult to find the appropriate balance because the needs of both groups are important. However, it is expected that ADHC and funded organizations work towards this goal in the future provision of these services. Person-centered service provision 10.49. Throughout the inquiry, the committee was told of the merits of moving towards person-centered service provision, including greater financial control. Carers called for the government to reconfigure its approach to service provision, including the way it distributes funds. In recent years, ADHC has moved towards person-centered planning, which seeks to ensure the person with disability is at the center of planning considerations. 53. There was debate as to whether this move has significantly altered the way in which clients receive services and supports. 10.50. Carers New South Wales noted that despite key government policies, including Stronger Together, promoting person-centered approach to service provision, it was not the reality of carers. 54. The author of Submission 88, carer to her husband, offered an example of this predicament. For example, if I need to race off for work, and my husband is taking our daughter to school, he's in a power chair, we might both need to leave the house by 9 a.m. This means the carer also has to leave the house then, although there is still 30 minutes left of their shift, which is mopping up in the bathroom after him, dealing with overnight drainage bottles etc., and finishing all that is required on a morning shift. Very annoying. 55. 10.51. A central tenet of person-centered planning is the flexible use of resources, including individualized funding for certain programs. Individualized funding can be seen as a means for further encouraging choice for carers and people with disability. 56. ADHC advised the committee that the agency has introduced a number of programs that have individualized support options, including direct funded and cooperative models for the attendant care program, family assistance fund, self-managed models for community participation, life choices and active aging day programs, extended family support, flexible respite, the younger people in residential aged care program. 57. 10.52. A number of carers told the committee that they would like to have greater financial control over the services and supports they access on behalf of the person they care for. The author of Submission 110, carer to her son, reasoned that families often know the person with disability best, and therefore should be able to choose which service providers they would like to use. 58. 10.53. Ms. Mason believed that if she had been offered individualized funding, she would have greater control over which service providers her daughter used, and the flexibility to alter their assistance as her circumstances changed. 59. 10.54. Carers New South Wales was supportive of client-centred service provision and individualised funding, however warned that there are potential problems with such moves. Giving carers more control over the services they use is important for increasing their choices and quality of life. It is essential, however, that any shift towards a person-centred approach, where the carer is at the core of decision-making about their lives, avoids creating more work for the carer, and does not leave them to navigate the complex service system on their own. 10.55. There was also some apprehension about the introduction of individualised funding, and the payment for tasks, that family carers had traditionally performed without remuneration. Ms. Robinson explained her concerns. There is a great concern that having an unpaid care provider within a family situation can sometimes damage rather dramatically the nature of the relationships between those family members, and there is a strong concern and a strong call for funding or individualized funding to be made available to the person with the disability, the person who is the care recipient, so that other services can be purchased, so that the relationship is not damaged. For example, if you are a gentleman and your wife is providing a lot of the personal care stuff, it changes the nature of your husband and wife relationship. It changes the nature of parent and children relationships, especially as they get older. 60.10.56. Ms. Christine Reagan, Senior Policy Officer of the Council of Social Service of New South Wales, NCOS, countered this argument, claiming that experience demonstrates that such problems exist in the current system and are handled reasonably well. 61.10.57. ADHC has made provisions to overcome concerns about hiring family members as paid carers. Certain programs have support intermediaries that can assist people with disability in the employment of family members. For example, Carers New South Wales currently provides support to older parent carers on the Mid-North Coast through the My Plan, My Choice individualised, packaged support participatory action research strategy. 62. Carers in the program are provided support packages of $20,000 to $45,000 and are assisted in their decision making by a support planner, an ADHC caseworker, and a support intermediary from Carers New South Wales. 63.10.58. Ms. Elena Katrakis, Chief Executive Officer of Carers New South Wales, explained that as support intermediaries, her organisation assists in the navigation of issues involving the employment of family members. Often families employ other family members as part of the self-directed care packages. That also means you are taking what was an informal support of Billy coming to mow the lawns, but then paying Billy to mow the lawns. Then he is no longer as part of the informal support network. He is part of the formal support network. That changes the dynamics and all of those things. When a family is employing another family member, there can be huge issues with that. With My Plan, My Choice, we are that support intermediary and we carry that risk for the family. We work with an employment agency. We do not employ the family member directly, but we employ them through an employment agency. If there is a risk or something goes wrong and Billy does not work out, you have an employment agency there, so you still have some safeguards around that. That model again is one component or example of a model. That is why that model is a bit different, because it takes that burden off that choice and the carer making that choice for themselves. That will work for some, but with others there is that protection as well. 64.10.59. Ms. Katrakis noted that using an employment agency ensures insurance issues are also taken care of. 65. Committee comment. 10.60. The committee recognizes that carers would like ADHC to provide more person-centered services to assist people with disability and their families. This was a common issue raised by many participants in the inquiry. Person-centered service provision rightly places the person with disability at the center of all planning decisions. This process allows for more flexible and responsive programs that cater to the specific needs of individuals. The importance of individualized funding options to the development of client-centered services cannot be underestimated. Individualized funding allows people with disability and their carers to be more involved in decision-making processes and encourages creative and dynamic service provision. 10.61. The committee notes that the government discusses the provision of person-centered services throughout its policies and procedures. It is therefore disappointing that the experience of carers does not reflect this stance. 10.62. The committee accepts that there are concerns regarding the introduction of payment for tasks traditionally completed completed for free by carers may disrupt family relationships. On the balance of evidence received during the inquiry, the benefits of individualized funding outweigh the unlikely occurrence of such measures causing a major rupture in family dynamics. ADHC has implemented a number of safety nets, such as providing support intermediaries in the My Plan, My Choice individualized, packaged support participatory action research strategy to help minimize such issues. 10.63. The issues of person-centered services are broader than those raised by carers. The committee has made recommendations in relation to these issues in Chapter 4 to Chapter 9. Access to future planning services. 10.64. A number of inquiry participants expressed frustration at the lack of government-provided future planning of services. The need for these services was most acutely felt by older carers, who often have great anxiety about what will happen to their loved one when they pass away. Ms. Carol Berry, Executive Director of the New South Wales Council on Intellectual Disability, said that the lack of future planning provisions characterised the crisis-driven nature of the disability service system. 66. 10.65. The current and impeding surge of unmet need for supported accommodation options further complicates this problem. Anglica argued that lack of available supported accommodation significantly compounds the crisis-driven nature of the system. While transition planning is a critical component of Anglica's Aging Parent Carer Support Coordination Program, a key element in the success of such planning is the availability of suitable and sustainable supported accommodation options for people with a disability. Currently, there is a significant gap in the provision of such accommodation, which would allow both aging parent carers and their adult children with a disability to be co-located in the same or adjoining facilities. 67. 10.66. An example of the current approach to future planning was described by Ms. Beverly Garland, 75 years of age and carer to her 47-year-old son. Ms. Garland was distressed that ADHC had not provided her with confirmation that her son will have a group home placement when she becomes ill or dies. 68. 10.67. The issue was highly emotive for some inquiry participants. Ms. Robertson reflected on her desire to ensure her son's future is secure. As a parent and a carer, I do not feel that I should want my son to pass away before I do, because of lack of services. Why should I? I know there are a lot of other parents and carers who feel the same way. Why should we? 69. 10.68. To overcome these difficulties, carers sought greater access to future planning services and called for the government to increase supported accommodation placements. As previously noted, Ms. Marshall said that families felt stressed and their health suffers when they do not have access to future planning services. 70. 10.69. The author of Submission 110 also highlighted the pressing need for families to be able to plan to transition their children to supported accommodation. If families knew they could plan for the future, then ironically many would actually care for their family member for longer, as they know there is an acceptable future solution. This would also simultaneously relieve stress and pressure from the family carers and significantly improve their quality of life and mental health. This would reduce costs to GUPT for services to the carers in addition to helping families enormously. 71. 10.70. Lynn, an older carer, also expressed dismay at the lack of future planning provisions and uncertainty in securing a supported accommodation placement for son. 72. 10.71. Care recipients are also concerned about the lack of future planning. The PDCN conducted a survey of people over 50 years of age with disability and found that their greatest fear was who would care for their children once their current carer can no longer able to do so. 73. 10.72. It was recommended that the provision of high-quality supported accommodation and access to free or low-cost legal advice to allow some degree on futures planning would assist carers to make decisions about the future of their loved ones. 74. Northcote Disability Services supported additional funding for future planning services and sought to ensure that these services access carers at younger ages to help them start planning for the future earlier. 75. 10.73. The committee was informed that ADHC is currently engaged in a futures planning project to assist older carers. 76. It is hoped that this project will encourage ADHC to increase its services in this area. Committee comment. 10.74. The committee considers the lack of suitable future planning services as unacceptable. Not being able to access these services places unnecessary burden on all carers, and is most acutely felt by older carers. The committee commends the provision of a dedicated future planning service to assist older carers and notes that ADHC is currently engaged in a futures planning project. The committee expects that the outcome of this project will encourage the delivery of extensive futures planning services for older carers. 10.75. The committee's recommendations on planning are provided in Chapter 4, Communication and Navigating the Disability Service Sector. 10.76. Inquiry stakeholders felt that ADHC does not effectively communicate with carers. Poor communication can lead to confusion and distress for carers and people with disability. Who cares? Identified access to information about supports, services, and assistance as one of the main challenges faced by carers. 77. 10.77. Ms. Robinson told a story of carer who recently came into contact with ADHC and was given incorrect information. This morning, I had a phone call from a person in relation to her mum, and her mum was about 48, and she had a physical disability that she acquired during her life. Her dad had been the carer for this person, but dad had suddenly died, so she rang the department. Someone told her she should ring the department. She rang the department to see if she could get some support in helping to support her and care for her mum during this intervening period, while they figure out what their options are, and they were told, "No, your mother wasn't born with a disability, so therefore we won't provide care." That is not exactly correct, but it highlights that sometimes having one spot where you go to for information is fine, but that information needs to be right. 78. 10.78. Clear communication and access points can assist carers to navigate the increasingly complex disability service sector. The committee heard reports of carers becoming frustrated because of poor communication with ADHC and service providers. For example, Ms. Jackie Dufty, carer to her partner, told the committee she had great difficulty organizing home care for her partner when they moved from Canada to New South Wales. 79. 10.79. Ms. Amelia Stair, senior policy officer, Disability Council of New South Wales, said that she was alarmed to hear parents say that they are exhausted by the system. "It is still very alarming and very hard to hear parents saying, 'I have an extraordinary son or daughter with a disability. I know I am a good parent, but I am extraordinarily exhausted with the system.' Whether it is getting into the system, whether it is servicing the system, whether it is getting the right services, whether it is about being able to navigate linking to another system, there still seems to be a level of overlay that parents and people caring for people with disabilities find just too hard to get through." 80. 10.80. In its submission, Carers New South Wales noted that poor communication resulted in carers having unrealistic expectations of services leads to poor futures planning. 81. Ms. Katra Kiss highlighted that unrealistic expectations, particularly for supported accommodation services, is especially concerning for older carers. 82. 10.81. The committee heard that ADHC needed to develop and disseminate more targeted information for called in Aboriginal carers. While ADHC has come some way in addressing the needs of these groups, it was thought further action should be taken. 10.82. It has been suggested that ADHC's provision of information to carers could be greatly improved, and the agency is working towards this goal. An ADHC directorate is currently developing good practice guidelines to assist staff on effective communication and how to build effective productive relationships with families. 83. Committee comment. 10.83. The committee understands the frustration of carers as they attempt to navigate the complex web that is the disability services sector. Their task is further complicated by poor communication and information provision by ADHC and funded organizations. ADHC and funded organizations should aim to provide clear, easy to understand information. The issues arising from the complexity of the disability services sector are not restricted to carers. The committee's recommendations are included in Chapter 4 and Chapter 5. Complaints handling and grievance mechanisms. 10.84. Inquiry participants expressed frustration towards ADHC and funded organizations' complaints handling and grievance mechanisms. Common frustrations included that clients were not aware of the appropriate processes, and that issues were not thoroughly investigated. 10.85. Complaints handling is considered in more detail in Chapter 9. This section raises some specific issues raised by carers. 10.86. The author of Submission 56, Carer to a Person with Very High Support Needs, questioned the comprehensiveness of ADHC's complaints handling procedures. The author referred to ADHC's complaints handling mechanisms as a joke and was disappointed with the way his complaint was investigated. 84. 10.87. Carers New South Wales told the committee that the increased availability of NGO-provided services and supports can compound confusion about which complaints handling and grievance mechanisms a carer should access. 85. Ms. Mason shared her harrowing experience complaining about the services provided by an ADHC-funded supported accommodation facility. 86. Ms. Mason was scathing of ADHC's complaints handling and grievance mechanisms. ADHC's current policy and procedures and mechanism for complaint handling and grievances are totally flawed. It is of major concern that ADHC does not have the power to directly investigate the very services it chooses to fund. Both ADHC and non-government service providers are allowed to conduct their own internal investigations. Complaints can be directed to the New South Wales Ombudsman, who does not appear to have the legislative power, funding or resources to conduct a thorough police-style investigation into serious issues such as breaches of the New South Wales Disability Service Standards, the use of restricted practices, and non-compliance with practices, procedures and guidelines which govern these issues. 87. 10.88. ADHC recognised that its complaints handling processes are insufficient. Mr. Moore told the committee that I do not think that we do well enough with complaints handling. I do not think that we get near as many complaints through our formal complaints mechanism as we would want. 88. Mr. Moore was clear that when making a complaint, clients are expected to first approach their service provider. If the client does not consider that the complaint has been properly investigated, they can approach ADHC. 89. Committee comment. 10.89. The committee appreciate that carers find ADHC provided and funded service complaints processes and grievance mechanisms inadequate. This situation is disappointing, as clients should expect to have their concerns thoroughly investigated and a resolution determined in a timely manner. The issues concerning the complaints processes and grievance mechanisms of ADHC and funded organizations are not restricted to carers. The committee's recommendations are included in Chapter 9. Impact on Family Relationships. 10.90. The committee heard that family relationships can become fraught when under the constant pressure of caring for a person with disability. Inquiry participants clearly elucidated their love and compassion for their family members, but explained that there are extensive stresses on their relationships. 10.91. Parents told the committee about the difficulties of caring for their child with disability. Their experiences highlight the strain that their partnerships and relationships with other children can be exposed to. 10.92. The case study below provides an example of the impact of being a person's carer on family relationships, brought before the committee during its public forum. Case study X, Ms. Sade Sarkis, 90. I am 32 years old and married with two young girls aged 5 and 3. I am my younger daughter's primary carer. Her name is Cherylise. It is important for me to be very open and honest about what life has been like for me, my husband, our children, relatives, friends, friends who are not friends anymore, because they do not understand our life and everything that comes with it. Cherylise was diagnosed with several medical conditions, and she has been left disabled as a result. Cherylise was born with floppy airways, meningeal malacia, and tracheomalacia as well, so she has been left with a tracheostomy. She was in ICU for 4 to 5 months. Our life just went upside down from there. By nature, I always saw that my glass was always half full, no matter how tricky it all got. To this day, that is still how I see my world, even though it feels like our house was the only house that the tsunami hit, and it feels like everything is tipped upside down. We do not really recognize our surroundings or our feelings. We just know we feel very challenged in every single way. I do have to pose the question, what does support really mean to families facing disability with a loved one? How did it ever get to feel that our family got so disconnected from society in terms of equality of rights, the right to a good quality quality of life or the right for our disabled daughter to receive even the basic therapies needed daily, to help condition her whole body, the right to obtain special seating, bedding, transport, never mind her starting school or anything else other children get the chance. When Cherylise was 2 years old, I'd had a breakdown. I have not slept for 2 years. I would sleep for maybe an hour, and then her alarm would beep, and I was up again. She is very dependent. I have a 5-year-old daughter as well who is healthy, and she needs me, just as much as Cherylise does, if not more. She was only 20 months old when Cherylise went into hospital. That year I felt like I had honestly lost both my children. My 5-year-old just 2 days ago said to me, "Mommy, my heart is beating really fast. Can you feel my chest?" That, to me, is anxiety. I am not quite sure, but I am definitely going to explore that. 10.93. The physical and emotional toll that caring can take on families can be devastating. As noted previously, Ms. Marshall said that caring for her son has had negative repercussions on the health of her family. 91.10.94. Ms. Anne Marie Elias, Policy and Communications Manager of COTA, told the committee that couples who have a child with disability are more likely to separate than couples who do not. 92. Ms. Elias further supported this assertion with statistics from the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare. In 1998, 99% of children with a disability, aged 0 to 14 years, lived in households. Of these children, 1,900, or 72%, lived in a couple-parent family, and 83,700, 28%, lived in a single-parent family. Bradbury and others, 2001, using the same data, estimated the disability rate for children aged 5 to 14 years in single-parent families to be almost double that found in couple families, 7.3% compared to 3.8% respectively. This result suggests that 30.6% of children with a disability live in single-parent families, compared with an estimated 18.1% of children without a disability. 93.10.95. Ms. Sharon Llewellyn, Regional Manager of the Benevolent Society, offered similar anecdotal evidence of family breakups and general ill health of carers. 94.10.96. The committee also received evidence from carers and care recipients about the strain their marriage/life partnership can at times come under. The following case study from a participant in the public forum is an example of those strains. Case study X, Ms. Jackie Dufty, 95. "I am the partner of a person with a spinal cord injury at C5 level, which renders him a quadriplegic. We have moved back to Australia from Canada on July 4th of this year. Before moving, with the assistance of Dan's parents who are living in Australia, we attempted to contact and set up home care. We found this process initially very difficult. Through many phone calls we were directed to and contacted ADHC with regards to setting up care for when we arrived. We were told that they would not send out any paperwork until we were in the country and we needed to meet with them to assess the specific needs. This requirement is unacceptable because the paperwork and assessment takes time, leaving my partner without care when we initially arrived in this country. We were able, however, to get respite organized for a 3-week interim period. Respite said that they could promise us an hour a day. My partner's care involves close to 5 hours per day, 7 days a week. 3 of these hours are involved with bowel care, which when we attempted to try to get more hours, we were told that we would have to suck it up and do it ourselves. As the man who spoke earlier regarding the relationship with his spouse, it does not constitute a very good marriage when you are dealing with fecal issues with your spouse. I feel that government agencies, ADHC included, lack interdepartmental communication and cooperation to provide an integrated approach to providing client care. Dan had to go into hospital. When he was ready to be discharged, we learnt that respite care was no longer available. The hospital discharge planners, nurses and social work department said that he would have to go into a long-term aged care facility until the money was allocated from ADHC to set up home care. Dan has been out of hospital mentally well. Putting him into a long-term aged facility would not constitute a proper mental well-being. It would actually regress the situation, since he has been out of hospital since the 1st of April 2009. At that point we were told that we should have filled out the paperwork before returning to Australia. It is just a kind of nasty circle. On a home care front, I feel government-funded home care agencies suffer from a lack of adequate funding and integration of services, affecting the quality of care they are able to provide. It is apparent to me that the quality of care that is being provided by home care agencies is lacking, Because there is not enough money being allocated to care agencies to provide the service. It was stated many times by different home care workers that they did not feel comfortable with the level of training on the job. We had a home care agent perform a bowel routine who was not trained in the procedure, and tore my partner's bowel wall. As a side note on transportation, we live in a population pocket on the central coast which leaves us relatively isolated due to a lack of public transportation. There are very few accessible buses. The train stations are not fully accessible, as at some stations there is a ramp only on one side, so we can get on, but we are unable to get off. We have to travel 20 minutes more down the line, then get back on the train, to come back to where we live. As a young couple we like to go out and do things. That has put a little rift in us getting out, and being a normal couple. 10.97 The author of 88 told of the pressures her family have faced, since her husband became a complete quadriplegic. My husband has always worked full-time, and in the years leading up to his accident was self-employed. I am no longer able to work full-time job due to the care which he needs, and caring for our 7-year-old daughter. It angers and frustrates me that we are good hard-working people who are now struggling to stay afloat and pay our bills. I am banging my head against a brick wall, and quite frankly, I'm exhausted. 96.10.98 Mr. Anthony Verrill was concerned that his disability placed a burden on his wife. I am acutely aware of the fact that I am unable to help my wife like any normal husband, and that I am somewhat of a burden to her, which does create a strain on the marriage. To preserve our happy marriage, I have to be very careful to spread the workload between my friends, my wife, the family, home care and other people I pay for assistance. When I do not get that help, obviously I get very frustrated waiting and repeatedly asking, and the people who are helping me get fed up attending to my never-ending needs, etc. 97.10.99 Inquiry participants argued that the disability services sector needs to create and uphold a support system that does not exacerbate pressures on family relationships. Mr. Hurd explained the current system does not allow for normal family functioning. We need to build a system of supporting people to have natural family relationships, which means I live with my partner, and she assists me with some things and I assist her with other things. People with disability contribute to family lives as well as receive from family care drivers. We need to not create familial caring as a ghetto. We need to try to make sure that people with a disability can live autonomous independent lives, so that family members can live independent autonomous lives. 98.10.100 Mr. Hurd hoped that the findings of the current Productivity Commission inquiry into disability care and support would alleviate stress on families. 99. Child relinquishment. 10.101 The committee received evidence of families being faced with the difficult decision to relinquish care of their child. While some families were threatened or forced to surrender care because of complaints to the Guardianship Tribunal, others told of relinquishing care as the final means to receive supported accommodation. 10.102 The committee heard from one young family that had been threatened that they would have to relinquish care of their daughter to the Department of Community Services, DCS. The author of Submission 71 was warned that her daughter could be removed from her home and her care subject to an inquiry by the Guardianship Tribunal. 100. The resulting DCS investigation proved fruitless and her daughter was not removed from the home. However, the experience was traumatic for all involved. 101. 10.103. Ms. Mason spoke of the anguish her family suffered when ADHC referred the care of her daughter to the Guardianship Tribunal. Ms. Mason claimed that the case against her was built on insufficient evidence and the Guardianship Tribunal allowed her to retain custody of their daughter. 102. Ms. Mason said of the experience, "I hope that no other families are treated so inhumanly and put through the same fear, trauma, stress and sleepless nights that I have endured, not knowing whether or not I would be purposely removed from my daughter's life." 103. 10.104 Some carers relinquish care of their loved one with disability because they feel they can longer provide adequate care. Abandoning their child is seen as the final option available to ensure they receive support. Ms. Robinson acknowledged that this was a long-standing problem, and although ADHC had come some way in addressing it, people continue to feel compelled to abandon their child as a last resort. 104. 10.105. The issue can become particularly pressing for older carers who are unsure of who will care for their son/daughter when they are no longer able to do so. Ms. Maloney referred to the situation as the doc's dump and said she had heartbreaking stories of families having to leave their child at respite because they could no longer cope and had no hope of securing supported accommodation. 105.10.106. The following case study is from a submission author who has relinquished care of her son. Case study X, Lynn, 106. Families of people with disabilities in desperate need of support are ignored or tossed from pillar to post. If only we knew that there was some provision for our precious children, if we knew that there was suitable supported accommodation for them, when we can no longer care, then we would be able to continue to care for, as long as possible. As things stand, there is almost no provision of care for our sons and daughters. Provision is minimal and almost non-existent. The places that they talk of are given to others. So what can we do? We are left with one option. We are told that we must relinquish our children to the care of the state. This is the only way we will find supported accommodation for them. This is not always suitable accommodation either. The advocacy groups tell us to do this, and if we don't follow their directive, they say sorry, we can no longer help you, and they walk away. This is the way it is for us. The system is crisis-driven, not planned in an orderly fashion, giving consideration to the families or their sons and daughters with disabilities. The results are heartbreaking and devastating, to say the least. This usually happens when a parent, often the mother, dies. The person with disabilities will then lose everything: their family, their home, their friends, their workplace and their community. This will happen in one foul swoop, as they will be whisked away to a respite unit and possibly moved around for a period of time, and then, when a group home is eventually found, it will surely be a long way from everything and everybody that they have known and trusted throughout their lives. The sad thing is that ADHC will have known of these situations for years. If only we could plan and ensure our children are housed and safe, close to home and their existing networks. If we could do this before we die, this is what we want. This is what our children deserve. I have relinquished care of my son. I did this to save his life. I had no other choice. People are in fact dying for lack of care. Families are desperate. Their lives are horrendous as they battle just to get through another day. Please do not continue to close your eyes and ears. Let us speak. Let us tell you how many of us there are. Committee comment 10.107. The committee understands the concerns carers have about the pressure their role places on their family. The strain on carers was evident during the inquiry. All inquiry participants were ardent in their love for the care recipient, be it their child or partner. However, it was apparent that caring is an all-encompassing activity that inevitably causes other relationships to somewhat fall by the wayside. 10.108. The committee also acknowledges the significant challenges caring places on traditional partnerships. Having a partner take care of intimate personal needs unquestionably places unnecessary additional strain on relationships. It was sad to hear inquiry participants describe themselves as a burden to their loved ones. All carers and care recipients wished to maintain their relationships. Their request was to lighten and share their load through the provision of more services. The committee would like to see ADHC extend services to people with disability and their carers to alleviate some of these pressures. Recommendations aimed at addressing carers' concerns about service delivery are included in Chapter 4 and Chapter 5. 10.109. The committee recognizes the terrible difficulty carers face when they consider the possibility of relinquishing care of their child. This decision is not made lightly, and a service system that drives people to such a choice is unacceptable. To support carers, particularly older carers, it is imperative to provide adequate future planning services and supported accommodation options. Recommendations aimed at addressing carers' concerns about service delivery are included in Chapter 4 and Chapter 5. Older carers. 10.110. Inquiry stakeholders raised concerns about the particular needs of older carers. It was widely accepted that the aging population will have a significant impact on the provision of disability services. An older carer is defined as an older person, aged over 60, who provides unpaid care and support to a family member or relative. 107. Older carers requested greater access to future planning services and voiced apprehension about the financial contribution they continued to make to their son/daughter with disability. 10.111. In 2003, the Australian Bureau of Statistics reported that over 35% of carers were aged over 65, and that 29% of informal carers were between the ages of 35 to 54. 108. The recent Auditor General's report on respite services stated that aging carers present a growing challenge for government as their capacity to provide care diminishes over time. At least 13% of carers in New South Wales, and more than 20% in the Hunter and Southern regions, are over 65 years old. 109.10.112. It was said that ADHC is facing a potential tsunami of middle-aged sons and daughters of aging carers who are dying. 110. In its submission, the New South Wales Division of the Australian Association of Gerontology cautioned of the additional pressures the aging population will place on the healthcare system. We note the mismatch between the increasing need for aging and disability services and the available funding for these services. Inflation, increase in pay rates and other cost increases have further eroded the ability of these services to meet the increasing demand for them, with consequences for service quality and timeliness. With increasing numbers of older people, a lack of quality and timely services will also increase pressure on the state-funded health system. 111.10.113. Ms. Emily Kasker, State Policy Coordinator, National Disability Services New South Wales, also warned that the government needed to tackle these problems soon, as the ageing population will have significant consequences on the role of informal care networks. Effective resource allocation and service planning is vital given the growing demand pressures on the system, due in large part to changing demographic trends, improvements in medical technology prolonging life and aging carers, leading to a decline in informal support networks. 112.10.114. The committee was informed that older carers have specific needs. Carers New South Wales stated that caring for a loved one, often with very little or no formal support, has a significant impact on the social, emotional, physical and financial well-being of older carers. 113. Also, as carers face age-related issues, their caring responsibilities do not necessarily diminish, nor do they receive additional supports. 114.10.115. As previously discussed, older carers were dismayed at the lack of suitable future planning services available. Service planning was seen as a means to ensuring older carers could plan for the transition of their loved one into a supported accommodation facility. 10.116. Aged carers were apprehensive about the financial pressure associated with their responsibilities. The authors of Submission 7, aged 77 and 79 to assist in the care of their 50-year-old daughter with disability, raised concerns about the expectation that they continue to financially support their daughter. At present, our daughter needs daily assistance with the many aspects of living independently. We, her aged parents, 77 and 79, have to help her with shopping, medical, dental and money matters. She purchases some of the other necessary services at rates of $27 per hour weekdays, and up to $53.60 per hour at weekends. Such a situation is plainly not sustainable. To date, our plans for our daughter's independent future have been blocked due to our inability to obtain an appropriate care package. 115.10.117. Issues associated with older carers from culturally and linguistically diverse, called backgrounds were brought to the committee's attention. COTA highlighted the plight of older court carers who have largely dealt with their child's disability of their own and now struggle to do so. 116. Ms. Elias used the example of the Italian community to illustrate this predicament. There are huge numbers of Italian older people who are caring for children with disability, who have never interacted with the care system. They are quite a handful for anybody to take on. Some of the counselling and support the parents receive is the importance of assisting those kids to be as independent as possible, because then that provides greater options of who can actually care for them in the event that the parents go. 117.10.118. There were concerns about whether a grandparent caring for a grandson / granddaughter with disability has access to appropriate services. Ms. Elias told the committee that most grandparent carers do not receive respite, and that her organisation finds it difficult to direct grandparent carers to suitable services. 118. Ms. Elias further argued that grandparent carers particularly those from cold backgrounds, require additional supports. 119.10.119. In an effort to address the short-term needs of older carers, it was recommended that they be offered more intensive in-home supports. 120. This action could, however, cause a conflict of interest between the needs of an aging carer and the primary care recipient. Ms. Margaret Bowen, Chief Executive Officer of the Disability Trust, referred to the possibility of older carers becoming dependent on the services that are provided to their son/daughter with disability. 121.10.120. Ms. Penelope Desiches, Executive Manager Community and Residential Services, Respite and Care Solutions at the Disability Trust, explained that her organization provides services to a number of families where aging carers have become dependent on the services that are supposed to be for their loved one. The aged carers are looking typically at personal care support and respite support to bridge that gap from when they realize that they cannot cope on their own, but they are not ready to have their son or daughter move to a group home. We have a lot of situations where we are providing support to a 55-year-old person with a disability and to their 89-year-old mother who has dementia so that dad can go out and have 2 hours break in the middle of the week. There are quite different needs between the son and the mother, but you need to bridge those and try to work around that as well. 122.10.121. As noted previously, long-term policy solutions included that the provision of high-quality supported accommodation and access to free or low-cost legal advice to allow some degree on futures planning. 123.10.122. ADHC acknowledged that the cohort of older carers will grow as the population of people with disability ages, thus it needs to ensure appropriate services are available. 124. Mr. Moore told the committee he recognized that there would be substantially increased demand for funding in this area as people with disability and their carers are living longer. 125.10.123. Mr. Moore provided the committee with details of a number of strategies that ADHC has employed that focus on early intervention and long-term planning for older carers and their son/daughter with disability, including case management services for aging parents aged 60 years and over, and 45 years and over for Aboriginal carers, a futures planning project, supported accommodation models to meet the needs of people with disability who are aging, and day program initiatives targeting people with disability who are beyond middle age. 126.10.124. ADHC also provides the Respite for Aging Carers program and used funds from the Commonwealth-funded disability assistance packages to allocate additional services to aging carers. 127.10.125. The committee heard from two funded organizations about older carer programs. The Benevolent Society offers an aged carer program in Southern Sydney. The program provides $7,500 to each aged client and allows them to choose how they wish to allocate their money within certain parameters. For example, they can access respite services, receive personal care, and or use community transport. 128. Ms. Wellen said that program had been successful because aged carers felt a genuine sense of involvement and inclusion in decision-making process. 129.10.126. Carers New South Wales is a provider of the Support Coordination Program for Older Parent Carers, an ADHC-funded program that aims to identify and engage hidden older carers and assist families to build and strengthen social supports. 130. Carers New South Wales provides the program in Southeast Sydney, Orana/Far West, and on the Mid-North Coast. The organisation also provides an Aboriginal stream of this program. Committee comment 10.127. The committee recognises the significant contribution older carers play in the lives of people with disability and acknowledges their concerns about access to futures planning services and supported accommodation places, as well as apprehension over their ability to provide continued financial assistance to their loved ones. 10.128. The committee is concerned that the government has not put in place sufficient resources to assist older carers particularly as it is anticipated that there will be a boom in this demographic in coming years. Although ADHC currently provides a range of programs targeting older carers, it is alarming to note that a number of older carers, especially those from poor backgrounds, are not effectively engaged with the formal support system. 10.129. The committee considers it appropriate to extend in-home support services to older carers. Although there are concerns that such measures will impact negatively on the services provided to the primary care recipient, it may be possible to ensure the needs of both groups are met. The committee suggests that ADHC investigate the viability of increasing the level of intensive in-home supports to older carers. Culturally and linguistically diverse, called carers. 10.130. Inquiry participants were apprehensive about the ability of the government to identify and promote the needs of carers from called backgrounds. It has been estimated that 25% of all carers in New South Wales are from called backgrounds. 131. In its submission, Carers New South Wales stated that it had previously conducted a research project with Down Syndrome New South Wales and identified unique issues faced by this group, including cultural concepts of disability, illness, aging are often different from mainstream Australian perception, language and communication barriers, stigmatisation of people with disability or illness, and isolation from family supports. 132. 10.131. The committee was told that the word carer is often not able to be translated into other languages. Ms. Diana Kyan, Executive Director of the Multicultural Disability Advocacy Association, MDAA, explained that the confusion over the concept of a carer discouraged people from accessing services. The word carer is problematic in multicultural communities. Again, it is not universal. Often family members who provide care will see that as part and parcel of being a mother, wife, husband, partner, brother, or sister. It is part of being in a family support relationship. They do not necessarily identify themselves as a carer or even want to adopt that label. If you structure a service system based on the expectation that people need to adopt a label before they become eligible for service, then you exclude a range of people. If someone fronts up for services and they say they are a carer, they will automatically be channeled into a range of carer support services. If they do not do that, they might be excluded. 133. 10.132. The idea of respite can also be difficult to explain to called carers. Ms. Liz Forsyth, Manager of Service Development and Government Relations for Northcote Disability Services, informed the committee that the idea of respite being a break from the person with disability can be troublesome for certain groups. Traditionally, that respite is about the carer actually separated from the person they are caring for in order to give them a break. For some communities and cultures, that is not having a break, and actually separating them from that person is not a helpful way. 134. 10.133. The stigma associated with disability within some cultural groups can cause further problems for people with disability and their carers. For example, Northcote Disability Services provided anecdotal evidence of a Vietnamese family that attempted to keep their child's disability a secret and were reluctant to access services. 135. 10.134. Inquiry participants offered a number of ideas to assist ADHC to communicate with called carers. The MDAA was adamant that before the government examines the role of carers in called communities, it needs to scrutinize how the system can best support people with disability. If you are looking at supporting carers in those communities, you first need to look at how the system can best support people with a disability. Only when they are supported can the word carer become redundant. They can have a meaningful family relationship with a person with a disability. They can be who they are, mother, wife, or whatever, rather than purely basing their relationship on caring. 136. 10.135. This argument was supported by Carers New South Wales, who encouraged ADHC to first identify how carers and care recipients engage with the system, and then create and fund a service system that adequately supports their needs. 137. The MDAA also noted that service providers should build trust with clients to ensure they are comfortable accessing their supports. 138. 10.136. The committee was informed that the New South Wales government is committed to addressing the needs of people with disability and their carers from called backgrounds. ADHC recognised that there are a number of barriers to accessing its culturally diverse client base, and has therefore implemented a flexible, innovative, and responsive approach to service provision. 113.9.10.137 ADHC developed an action agenda, valuing and managing diversity. Cultural Diversity Strategic Framework 2010-2012, to better equip itself and funded organizations to meet the needs of clients from called backgrounds. The action agenda aligns with Better Together and Stronger Together, and integrates cultural diversity into ADHC's core business. 140.10.138. Since 2006, ADHC has implemented a number of called specific projects that aim to address the needs of people with disability and their carers. These programs include the called Innovative Accommodation Support Initiative, funding to explore the meaning on 44 commonly used English terms in the disability sector and to develop fact sheets in 14 languages, funding to create a DVD in 8 languages about preparing a child with disability for school, and funding to develop an information kit, Raising Kids Together, that was translated into 5 languages. Aboriginal carers. 10.139. Aboriginal carers are confronted with similar barriers to service provision as called carers. The committee was told that Aboriginal carers found it difficult to access services due to different cultural understandings of disability-related terms, mistrust of government institutions, and lack access to services in regional areas. The Aboriginal Disability Network, ADN, asserted that it is important to recognize Aboriginal experiences of dispossession, removal of children and discrimination when discussing issues of interaction with the government. 141.10.140. An obstacle to ADHC's provision of services to Aboriginal carers is that certain Indigenous communities do not experience disability in the same manner as mainstream society. The ADN noted that in some traditional languages the word disability cannot be translated, while in other communities there can be a stigma surrounding a bad karma view of disability. 142. Also, parents and carers are reluctant to seek help because they fear being judged as bad parents. 143.10.141. Various inquiry participants noted that Indigenous communities often have issues with the idea of respite. Mr. Damien Griffiths, executive officer of the Aboriginal Disability Network, explained that Aboriginal carers are often hesitant to use centre-based respite services. Many carers the ADN meet express concern or a deep reluctance to use respite services. This is because it may conjure connotations to old days of forced removal. The notion of having the person you care for taken away to a respite centre sits uncomfortably with many Aboriginal carers. Furthermore, the idea of a centre-based approach to respite may also be viewed as being culturally inappropriate by some Aboriginal carers. In addition, the respite centre itself may be some distance away from home, even possibly in a different town or region, which will also cause reluctance. 144.10.142. Ms. Forsyth said that she had encountered similar issues when working with Aboriginal families. 145. Also, Ms. Anita Fisher, senior manager, client programs for Northcote Disability Services, referred to the fact that the term respite cannot be translated into Indigenous languages. 146.10.143. Another concern was the lack of available services outside metropolitan and major regional centres. Out-of-home respite can be located quite a distance from people with disability, so they are separated from their carers, extended families and communities. Mr. Griffiths suggested that the government support Aboriginal carers through the use of in-home or community-based respite services to discourage the practice of taking people away from their communities. 147.10.144. The ADN called for greater recognition of extended family and community members who provide respite. It was suggested that community groups who provide respite should be receive subsidies and greater resources to assist in their endeavours. 148.10.145. The provision of services to Aboriginal people can be further complicated because carers and other family members may also have a disability. Mr. Griffiths said that the ADN regularly meets with carers who have disability, often acquired through the demands of being a primary carer. Furthermore, it is not uncommon for the ADN to meet families that have several members with disability. 149.10.146. As previously discussed, it is necessary to consider how cultural groups such as Aboriginal carers, engage with the current service system before developing additional programs and supports. Programs need to be suitably flexible and dynamic to meet the needs of Aboriginal carers. Ms. Katrakis explained that different approaches to service provision are required depending on circumstances. Responding to culturally diverse carers is very difficult. You really need to look at how those services are identifying carers and how care recipients are engaging. Part of the answer is having information in relevant languages, but it is about getting into the communities and really working with those communities. It is about looking at what that service mix might be. Sometimes a brochure or an Aboriginal-looking brochure about how to get services is not enough. It needs to be more at the coalface and to have appropriately trained and responsive services on the ground. 150.10.147 Carers New South Wales has taken a number of steps to address barriers to support for Aboriginal carers. These initiatives include providing an Aboriginal stream of the support coordination program for older parent carers, consulting with older Aboriginal carers to create a training DVD as part of the Aboriginal Carers Health and Wellbeing Training Program, and revising the Koori Yarning Resource Manual, a guide for service providers on how to work with Aboriginal carers in a culturally appropriate way. 151.10.148 Ms. Katrakis described the Aboriginal component of the Support Coordination Program for Older Parent Carers as a success. 152 Ms. Katrakis noted that the program received half the funding of the generic component, employed Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal staff, and worked with communities and service providers to the best outcomes for carers. 153. The ADN praised Carers New South Wales for its efforts to support Aboriginal carers. 154. Committee comment 10.149. The committee notes the concerns of inquiry participants about the specific, often unmet needs of called in Aboriginal carers. These groups play a significant role in the lives of people with disability and are entitled to the same level of services and supports as mainstream carers. The committee acknowledges that there are often difficulties reaching these groups because of cultural differences. However, the government should continue to make a concerted effort to reach out and support called in Aboriginal carers. 10.150. The committee accepts that the government needs to evaluate the way in which people from called backgrounds and or Aboriginal people engage with the disability service system before it makes further decisions regarding carers from these groups. For recommendations concerning communication and information dissemination to people from called backgrounds and Aboriginal people, see Chapter 4 and Chapter 5. 1. Submission 33, Carers New South Wales, P2. 2. Submission 33, Carers New South Wales, P1. 3. Submission 33, Carers New South Wales, P1. 4. Submission 71, Name suppressed, P1. 5. Submission 88, Name suppressed, P1. 6. Submission 38, Ms. Jennifer Allo-Ohm, P1. 7. Mr. Doughty Hurd, Executive Officer, Disability Council of New South Wales, Evidence, 9 August 2010, P31. 8. Mr. Jim Moore, Chief Executive, Ageing, Disability and Home Care, Evidence, 27 September, P6. 9. New South Wales Department of Health, New South Wales Carers Action Plan 2007-2012, 2007, P1. 10. Submission 31, Mr. Jim Moore, Chief Executive, Ageing, Disability and Home Care, P25. 11. New South Wales Department of Health, New South Wales Carers Action Plan 2007-2012, 2007, P9. 12. Ms. Elena Katrakis, Chief Executive Officer, Carers New South Wales, Evidence, 9 August 2010, P52. 13. Submission 31, P23. 14. Honourable P. Primrose MP, Minister for Ageing, Disability and Home Care, Awards for Outstanding Local Carers, Media Release, 20 October 2010. 15. NSWPD, Legislative Council, 12 March 2010, P21378. 16. Parliament of New South Wales, Carers, Recognition, Bill 2010, accessed the 22nd of October 2010, http://prod/parliament/nswbills.nsf/v3billshome17. Carers, Recognition, Act 2010, New South Wales, 18, NSWBD, Legislative Assembly, the 21st of April 2010, p. 20/2028-19, Answers to Questions on Notice, Dr. Richard Matthews, Deputy Director General Strategic Development, New South Wales Health, the 27th of September 2010, p. 320, Answers to Questions on Notice, New South Wales Health, the 27th of September 2010, p. 321, Ms. Annette Ellis MP, Chair, Standing Committee on Family, Community, Housing and Youth Media Release, Urgent Assistance Recommended for Carers, the 1st of May 2010, p. 1, accessed the 7th of October 2010, http://www.f.gov.au/house/committee/fchi/media/media16.pdf22, Government Response, Who Cares? Report on the Inquiry into Better Support for Carers, the 29th of October 2010, p. 21-23, Ms. Katra Kiss, Evidence, the 9th of September 2010, p. 47-24, Submission 51, Ms. Ruth Robinson, Chief Executive Officer, Physical Disability Council of New South Wales, and Ms. Anne-Mary Elias, Policy and Communications Manager, Council on the Aging New South Wales, p. 4, quoting, Working Carers, 2009, http://www.workingcareers.org.au/carer-stories/l051-no-place-for-r-loved-ones-to-go-25. Submission 13A, Ms. Bernadette Maloney, p. 2, 26. Submission 29, Lynn, p. 3, 27. Ms. Christine Regan, Senior Policy Officer, Council of Social Service of New South Wales, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, p. 62-28. Submission 110, Name Suppressed, p. 1-29. Submission 82, Name Suppressed, p. 1-30. Submission 110, Name Suppressed, p. 1-31. Ms. Janice Marshall, Public Forum, the 30th of September, pp. 10-11-32. Submission 38, p. 2-33. Submission 31, p. 47-34. Mr. Moore, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, p. 6-35. Submission 31, p. 34-36. Submission 14, Ms. Carolyn Mason, p. 5-37. Ms. Valerie Noon, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, p. 2-38. Submission 43, Name Suppressed, p. 2-39. Submission 109, Name Suppressed, p. 3-40. Department of Human Services, Aging, Disability and Home Care, Respite, accessed the 13th of October 2010, http://www.dadc.nsw.gov.au/dadc/people+with+a+disability/respite.htm41. Submission 15, Ms. Estelle Shields, p. 4-42. Submission 38, pp. 2-3-43. Ms. Debbie Robertson, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, p. 23-44. Ms. Debbie Robertson, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, p. 23-45. Submission 13A, p. 1-46. Submission 13A, p. 1-47. Submission 49, Mr. Reg Mason, pp. 2-3-48. Submission 33, p. 4-49. Submission 96, Association for Children with a Disability New South Wales, p. 150. Answers to Questions on Notice, Mr. Jim Moore, Chief Executive, the 9th of August 2010, p. 12-51. Mr. Hurd, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, p. 31-52. Ms. Ruth Robinson, Executive Officer, Physical Disability Council of New South Wales, Evidence, the 3rd of September, p. 23-53. Submission 31, p. 70-54. Submission 33, P5, 55. Submission 88, P2, 56. Submission 33, P13, 57. Submission 31, P71, 58. Submission 110, P1, 59. Submission 14, P26, 60. Ms. Robinson, evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, P23, 61. Ms. Reagan, evidence, the 9th of August 2010, P65, 62. Answers to questions on notice, Ms. Elena Katrakis, Chief Executive, Carers New South Wales, the 27th of August 2010, P5, 63. Answers to questions on notice, Ms. Elena Katrakis, Chief Executive, Carers New South Wales, the 27th of August 2010, P5, 64. Ms. Katrakis, evidence, the 9th of August 2010, P54. 65. Ms. Katrakis, evidence, the 9th of August 2010, P54. 66. Ms. Carol Berry, Executive Director, New South Wales Council on Intellectual Disability, evidence, the 26th of August 2010, P19. 67. Submission 66. Mr. Peter Kell, Chief Executive Officer, Anglican Diocese of Sydney, P15. 68. Submission 3. Ms. Beverly Garland, P1. 69. Ms. Robertson, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, P24. 70. Ms. Marshall, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, P21. 71. Submission 110, Name Suppressed, P1. 72. Submission 29, P3. 73. Ms. Robinson, Evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, P28. 74. Ms. Margaret Bowen, Chief Executive Officer, Disability Trust, evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, P58 and Ms. Anne-Marie Elias, Policy and Communications Manager, Council on the Aging, evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, P29, 75. Submission 70, Ms. Liz Forsyth, Manager, Service Department and Government Relations, Northcote Disability Services, P5, 76. Answers to additional questions on notice, Mr. Jim Moore, Chief Executive, Aging, Disability and Home Care, the 9th of August 2010, P17, 77. Submission 33, P8, 78. Ms. Robinson, Evidence, the 3rd of September, P30, 79. Ms. Jackie Dufty, Public Forum, the 27th of September 2010, P13, 80. Ms. Amelia Stair, Senior Policy Officer, Disability Council of New South Wales, evidence, the 9th of August 2010, P29, 81. Submission 33, P9, 82. Ms. Katrakis, evidence, the 9th of August 2010, P47, 83. Submission 31, P91, 84. Submission 56, Name Suppressed, P5, 85. Ms. Katrakis, evidence, the 9th of August 2010, P55, 86. Ms. Carolyn Mason, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, P16, 87. Ms. Mason, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, P16, 88. Mr. Moore, evidence, the 9th of August 2010, P18, 89. Mr. Moore, evidence, the 9th of August 2010, P18, 90. Ms. Said Sarkis, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, pp 20-23, 91. Ms. Marshall, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, p23, 92. Ms. Anne-Marie Elias, Policy and Communications Manager, Council on the Aging, evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, p29, 93. Answers to questions on notice, Ms. Anne-Marie Elias, Policy and Communications Manager, Council on the Aging, the 3rd of September 2010, p1, quoting Australian Institute of Health and Welfare, AIHW, 2004, Children with Disabilities in Australia, AIHW CAT, No. Dis 38, Canberra, LHW, 94. Ms. Sharon Llewellyn, Regional Programs Manager, Southern Sydney, The Benevolent Society, Evidence, the 26th of August 2010, p. 2695. Ms. Dufty, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, pp. 13-14, 96, Submission 88, p. 4. 97. Mr. Anthony Verrall, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, p. 15. 98. Mr. Hurd, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, p. 31. 99. Mr. Hurd, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, p. 31. 100. Submission 71, p. 1. 101. Submission 71, p. 1. 102. Ms. Mason, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, p. 16. 103. Ms. Mason, Public Forum, the 30th of September 2010, p. 16. 104. Ms. Robinson, Evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, p. 26, 105, Submission 13A, p. 2, 106, Submission 29, pp. 4-5, 107, Answers to Additional Questions on Notice, Ms. Elena Katrakis, Chief Executive Officer, Carers New South Wales, the 27th of August 2010, p. 3, 108, Submission 51, p. 4, quoting Australian Bureau of Statistics, 2003, Disability, Aging and Carers, Summary of Findings, https://abs.gov.au/austads/apps/lookup/4430.omain+feature-resil2003?mark0pen document 109 Submission 51, p4, quoting Auditor General's Report Performance Audit, 2010, Access to Overnight Centre-Based Disability Respite, p10, 110, Submission 15, p2, 111, Submission 37, Professor Julie Biles, President, New South Wales Division of the Australian Association of Gerontology, p1, 112, Submission 32, Ms. Emily Kaska, State Policy Coordinator, National Disability Services, New South Wales, p10, 113, Answers to Additional Questions on Notice, Ms. Elena Katrakis, Chief Executive Officer, Carers New South Wales, the 27th of August 2010, p3, 114, Answers to Additional Questions on Notice, Ms. Elena Katrakis, Chief Executive Officer, Carers New South Wales, the 27th of August 2010, p3, 115, Submission 7, Name Suppressed, p1, 116, Ms. Anne-Marie Elias, Policy and Communications Manager, Council on the Aging, Evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, pp. 23-24. 117. Ms. Elias, Evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, p. 29. 118. Ms. Elias, Evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, p. 25. 119. Ms. Elias, Evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, p. 29. 120. Ms. Margaret Bowen, Chief Executive Officer, Disability Trust, Evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, p. 58. 121. Ms. Bowen, Evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, p. 58. 122. Ms. Penelope Desmiches, Executive Manager Community and Residential Services, Respite, and Care Solutions, the Disability Trust, Evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, p. 58. 123. Ms. Bowen, Evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, p. 58 and Ms. Elias, Evidence, the 3rd of September 2010, p. 29. 124. Answers to Additional Questions on Notice, Mr. Jim Moore, Chief Executive, Aging, Disability and Home Care, the 9th of August 2010, p. 17. 125. Mr. Moore, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, p. 17. 126. Answers to Additional Questions on Notice, Mr. Jim Moore, Chief Executive, Aging, Disability and Home Care, the 9th of August 2010, p. 18. 127. Answers to Additional Questions on Notice, Mr. Jim Moore, Chief Executive, Aging, Disability and Home Care, the 9th of August 2010, p. 18-128. Ms. Whelan, The Benevolent Society, Evidence, the 26th of August 2010, pp. 26-27-129. Ms. Whelan, The Benevolent Society, Evidence, the 26th of August 2010, pp. 26-27-130. Answers to additional questions on notice. Ms. Elena Katrakis, Chief Executive Officer, Carers New South Wales, the 27th of August 2010, p. 4-131. Multicultural Disability Advocacy Association and Carers New South Wales, Working with Cultural Competence. Carers and the New South Wales Action Plan, accessed the 12th of October 2010. http://pdfs/conf2009/concurrent_sessions/friday-session/207/cultural-competence_matt209.9.pdf 132. Submission 33, p. 12-133. Ms. Diana Kyan, Executive Director, Multicultural Disability Advocacy Association, Evidence, the 26th of August 2010, pp. 47-48-134. Ms. Liz Forsyth, Manager, Service Development and Government Relations, Northcote Disability Services, Evidence, the 26th of August 2010, p. 55-135. Ms. Anita Fisher, Senior Manager, Northcote Disability Services, Evidence, the 26th of August 2010, p. 55-136. Ms. Diana Kyan, Executive Director, Multicultural Disability Advocacy Association, Evidence, the 26th of August 2010, p. 48-137. Ms. Katrakis, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, p. 52-138. Ms. Kyan, Evidence, the 26th of August 2010, p. 48-139. Submission 31, p. 79-140. Answers to additional questions on notice. Mr. Jim Moore, Chief Executive, Aging, Disability and Home Care, the 9th of August 2010, p. 26-141. Submission 97, Aboriginal Disability Network, p. 2-142. Submission 97, p. 3-143. Mr. Damien Griffiths, Aboriginal Disability Network, Evidence, the 27th of September 2010, p. 36-144. Answers to questions on notice. Mr. Damien Griffiths, Executive Officer, Aboriginal Disability Network, the 27th of September 2010, p. 2-145. Ms. Forsyth, Evidence, the 26th of August 2010, p. 55-146. Ms. Fisher, Evidence, the 26th of August 2010, p. 55-147. Answers to questions on notice. Mr. Damien Griffiths, Executive Officer, Aboriginal Disability Network, the 12th of October 2010, p. 2-148. Answers to questions on notice. Mr. Damien Griffiths, Executive Officer, Aboriginal Disability Network, the 12th of October 2010, p. 2-149. Answers to questions on notice. Mr. Damien Griffiths, Executive Officer, Aboriginal Disability Network, the 12th of October 2010, p. 2-150. Ms. Elena Katrakis, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, p. 52-151. Answers to additional questions on notice. Ms. Elena Katrakis, Chief Executive Officer, Carers New South Wales, the 27th of August 2010, p. 4-152. Ms. Katrakis, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, p. 53-153. Ms. Katrakis, Evidence, the 9th of August 2010, p. 53-154. Answers to questions on notice. Mr. Damien Griffiths, Executive Officer, Aboriginal Disability Network, the 12th of October, 2010, p. 2,